I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You know, I was chatting with my dear, dear friend, Brendan Walsh, who's in Mensa, and we were talking a little bit about our online habits at night. You know, there's a thing called sleep hygiene. If you haven't heard of it, it's the term related to how you should go to bed at night. And if you're a healthy person, most healthy people, what they do before they go to bed is they wrap their entire body in lavender bandages, leaving only their genitals exposed. And then usually they have some kind of marsupial creature in the house who comes and laps slowly at their genitals until they have a mild orgasm. Can't have too strong an orgasm or you're going to get excited and stay awake. You have a nice, mild, sort of semi-shuddering orgasm, and then you fall asleep after the marsupial laps up your sprays. But I don't do that. I put on sweatpants, usually in a t-shirt, and I lay in bed with my wife and I look at my phone and she falls asleep before I do usually. And then I go through a variety of news sources. I'm going to start with Drudge Report. I head over to Reddit World News, then I head over to Reddit News. Then I'll head over to Reddit WTF, and then sometimes I might take a quick little stop by Popping, Reddit Popping, and look at people popping zits and cysts. And then after that, I'll go to r/conspiracy and try to find a nugget of strangeness that my mind can feast on. And then I'll fall asleep and dream about having sex with crocodiles. This is usually my pattern. It's the opposite of sleep hygiene, and I wouldn't recommend it for anyone. But during one of my explorations into Reddit conspiracy, I came upon a wonderful conspiracy theory, which is the idea that the thing that we understand as history is completely wrong, and that a different history happened that has been hidden from us for various, you know, conspiratorial reasons. I don't believe this, by the way. I like it in the same way I like Rosemary's Baby. Do I believe that somebody was the mother of the Antichrist? No, but do I like watching Rosemary's Baby? And if I watched Rosemary's Baby exactly 666 times? Yes. The answer is yes. You can enjoy a thing without believing in it at all, which is why I'm semi-bummed out about the current prohibition on access to conspiracy theories via the normal avenues. In the old days, you used to be able to go on YouTube, plug in Flat Earth, and you would start, just the most insane shit would start getting suggested to you by the AI, and you would go deeper and deeper and deeper until eventually you came to like a gang stalking video or something that was completely unintelligible, maybe like a zoom in on a foggy map with some guttural utterances happening. And that's what it used to be like. But because the statistical probability is that if you put anything out there into the world and enough people look at it, some percentage of those people are going to be completely, completely out of their fucking minds. And of the ones that are going to be out of their minds, there's some statistical probability that one or two of them is going to take whatever data they get and then do something with it. And we've seen the results of this, unfortunately, when a gunman shot at a pizza parlor. So, you know, how do we deal with the fact that we have so many different sorts of information out there? And the statistical probability is that some people are going to slurp that shit up and it's going to send them out into traffic, jerking off onto fucking cars. I don't know. And luckily, it's not my job because I don't run the internet. I'm not a politician and I don't have to pretend like I know the answers. But I will say this. I am not going to go into traffic and jerk off on cars unless it's for a very good reason. And that good reason has come to me from YouTube. But the main thing is I'm a connoisseur of conspiracy theories. I collect some people, they enjoy Greek mythology. Some people love Norse mythology. Some people love, folklore, folk tales. You know, I got, my mind was melted with boredom once by I think a class I took where they talked about the Jack Tales of the Appalachian Mountains. I no offense to people who are into that shit. It just isn't my thing. My thing is conspiracy theories. And whenever I find a new one, I dive in and go as deep as I can and try to see how far it goes and who's attracted to it. And there's so many wonderful ones out there. If I was going to recommend a few, the Mandela effect, the idea that we're in a ever schisming, cracking, fragmenting multiverse, and some of us are flipping into other multiverses, is glorious, and you can get lost in it for a long time. I went through a really wonderful Hollow Earth phase to the point where at like 3 a.m. I sent a text message to I think she was a Stanford professor. I'm not sure. She never wrote back, asking her, a geologist, if the shit I'd been reading that maybe there's like hollow places in the earth was true. She didn't write, but it was late at night. Who could blame her? But my newest discovery, which we talk about on the podcast, so I won't go too deeply into it, is this idea of the hidden history, or the fact that there was a cataclysm that happened and it's been hidden from us intentionally by our keepers. Oh, it's a good one. Really love it. Don't believe it at all, but I do love it. I will say this, something today that emerged really freaked me out, as it should freak anyone out who's seen it, which is they duplicated my friend Rogan's voice with some kind of AI. And it's good. It did a good job. It does sound like him. Like, you can hear some kind of like distortion in it. Just a tiny, tiny little bit of a distortion, but it sounds like him. And it's so cool and so absolutely fucking nuts to examine the implications of what is down the road for us, which is that we all right now live in a time where we feel like we have some autonomy over our self and over our personalities and whatever our particular way of being in the world is. You know, like everything that you do, the way you roller skate, if you're a roller skater, maybe you've like figured out a way to like do that backwards roller skate thing that fancy pants do at the roller rinks. Oh, I will hate on those people all day fucking long, man. Those people who are like so proud of their roller skating tactics and they roller skate backwards and do little spins and zips and flips and they've got like fucking roller skating outfits on and like their own personal kind of roller skates and like, I don't know, some kind of like special headwear and shit. And I'll hate on them all day long and it's pure, deep player hating. Like, I fucking am jealous is what I mean. I mean, I'm jealous like the worst kind of just little bitch. Because if I could do that shit, I'd do it all day long. I'd wear headbands and rainbow shirts and fucking just zing around roller skating rinks, roller skating backwards and shaking my ass. If I could have done that when I was a kid, I don't know what would have happened to me. My life would have gone in a completely different direction. But for a lot of people, that's like their identity, man, believe it or not. And it's the same with bowling, golf, you know, you pick it, you name it. You're driving down the street and you look over, there's that guy in like a leather jacket on his fucking motorcycle. Rah, rah, rah. He's so proud of the person in the Ferrari who's proud of their fucking car. Right now, I'm proud of my fucking bike. It's got a Copenhagen wheel on it. It's an e-bike, and I drive to a place I'm not allowed to talk about yet on that bike every day if it's not raining, just about. And I'm proud of it in a gross way, not like a nice pride. I'm like proud and embarrassingly egoic about it. Like, I get off on the fact that I can zing by cars that are stuck in traffic, and I fantasize that they're jealous of me, even though none of that is true and everyone's just trying to get home. It's just an embarrassment. It's embarrassing, that part of me. But it's like kind of a little bit of who I am, my modular synth, my podcast, my dogs, my beard, all this stuff, my personality. It's like, this is me. And so I don't know if you saw it, but this Rogan thing, they perfectly duplicated his voice. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the superstitions of some indigenous people, and I'm not either, except for like things that I've maybe seen in movies, so it could be absolute bullshit. This might just be an urban myth, but supposedly there are some people out there who don't want you to take their picture because they think it'll steal their soul, and I'm not going to pat myself on the fucking back, all right? I'm not going to pat myself on the back here, but ages ago, ages and ages and ages, I don't think I'm Nostradamus. I'm just your basic, yappy stoner with some mild narcissism, okay? I don't think it's, I don't mean to proclaim that I am a prophet sent here by the divine, but holy fucking shit. Quite some time ago, I did have a vision. My friends, my sweet, sweet, beautiful children, come gather and sit before my tucket while I teach thee and perfume your brow with my sweat. If you want to touch my feet, you can. I had a vision that at some point, AI would duplicate us. In fact, it probably wasn't my vision. I'm sure I read it somewhere and then decided I had invented it in my own head. Probably Ray Kurzweil said this. Who fucking cares who said it? It doesn't matter anymore. That's the point. Because copyright, property, intellectual property, the meat and potatoes of how the entertainment business works has always been based on that there were certain people who have very special takes on reality. These were the writers or the announcers or whatever. And Jesus fucking Christ, you know, as I'm like sort of rolling my eyes at the impending AI apocalypse. Oh yeah, well that sucks. I'm sorry the fucking Uber drivers are going to be out of a job. I'm sorry the accountants are going to be out of the job. I'm sorry the lawyers are going to be out of a job. I'm sorry that the factory workers are going to be out of a job, but boy, there's always going to be a need for podcasters, comedians, people with an interesting take, and, you know, quirky folk who figured out a way to get their stuff out there and be funny. And man, wow, it's a strange swooning feeling to realize that even that's going to go away. They're just going to duplicate us. That's what I'm saying. I don't know the terms of services I fucking signed. Do you know how many terms of services I've signed when I've signed up for various video games and online services? I don't know what shit I said yes to when I got my iPhone. I just scroll down and go, yeah, sure, whatever. You want to put a cookie in my fucking thing? Go ahead. Put 3 cookies up there. That's how I like it. 3 cookies in my browser, baby. Shove them in. Fucking fist my browser with your cookies. Monitor, watch, gather my data. Take my biorhythms. I don't care. I want to read the fucking story about the Loch Ness Monster appearing in goddamn Mississippi. I'll give you whatever you want. But man, it's just wild to think that what they're going to do, and they might wait till we're dead, but what they're going to do is resurrect us. Holy fucking shit. You know, like, let me explain. We all know the various stories about the end of the world, you know, and especially like the Judeo-Christian story, the trumpet blows, the dead rise, there's a final day of judgment. And, it, you know, if you're like a literalist, you've probably haven't spent much time thinking about, like, well, I hope that when the dead rise, their skin grows back. They're fucking that whatever clothes they were wearing when then. What happens if you died naked? Like, is there going to be a lot of, like, naked, freshly resurrected, very confused people from the 1200s wandering around? What happens if you're, like, buried in a mountain or something? It's like the people who, what about the people who fell into the dams when they were building the great dams? Like, all the dead bodies in those, in the concrete, like, how do they get out? Or they just kind of, like, wake up but they can't open their eyes and they're stuck in concrete? Anyway, that was, like, that's one of the crazy ideas about the end of the world, you know, the dead come back to life. But holy fucking shit, what it really is they're just going to bring us all back to life. That's what I said a long time ago. They're going to take us. They're going to take your online profile and they're going to resurrect it and they're going to put it on their service. And you're going to have to deal with the fact that a duplicate of you is now existing in some kind of simulated ecosystem. And now we're going to have to also deal with the fact that that simulated version of you in this fucking ecosystem more than likely is going to be better than you. And if you look at the Rogan AI replication that they did that. They, like, had him read tongue twisters as a kind of, like, look, it's already a little better than you. I mean, I don't know Rogan's proficiency at tongue twisters. He's probably great at them. Who knows? I'm not good at them. But it's not just that, you know? It's not just going to be your voice. It's going to be your face and your voice. And it's going to be mixed with an AI that has access to all the information in the world. So there is going to be an infinitely more intelligent, articulate, funnier, cooler thing that looks just like you online. And it gets even fucking weirder because our online identities have become who we are. You, many of you, know me, not because you've met me in person, but through this podcast. And this podcast, where does it exist? Where do I live when I'm not in my body? I'm just a series of ones and zeros on various servers somewhere. My voice, anytime you download and listen to it, it's just being duplicated, you know? And that's going to happen to all of us. That's every single one of us. If you've got a Facebook account, if you've got any kind of digital thumbprint out there, you are going to be duplicated. You're going to have to deal with the fact that some virtual version of you is getting fucked by clowns in a fucking AI simulated universe. That can happen. That is going to happen. We're going to have deep fake versions of us that our enemies have access to. And we are going to have to inevitably get the email. Fuck enemies. I'm friends with comedians. I know it's coming. I know it's coming. I know it's coming. What's coming is some kind of goddamn clown. Some AI clown. Some simulated virtual clown with bat wings and like he's with big fucking banshee boobs and seven horse cocks and cocks on his feet, and I just know. I know, my friends. I know it's coming. I'm going to have to look at an AI version of me with just banshees just pooping on it and coming. And you know what I'm saying? It's like you're going to have to deal with just the fact that, like, there's going to be various versions of you running rampant through the internet. You know, these, who knows what happens when they become autonomous? What are you going to do when 1,000 versions of you suddenly start making their own Twitter accounts and they're funnier and cooler than you? We're going to be surpassed by ourselves. We're all going to be wandering around the world, turning, going online to ask ourselves to, like, do shit for us because they're more articulate than us. That's just right around the corner, friends. It's just look at the Rogan thing. There's going to be more of those coming, matter of time, more of these deep fakes coming. In fact, this isn't even me. This is an AI version of me. It's the exact same technology. This was just sent to Duncan. And Duncan's putting it up on his podcast right now because he's too busy right now to do his own stuff. The last three or four opening rants that you've heard, it hasn't even been Duncan. Duncan is working in a cannery right now in Alaska. He's up to his fucking neck in fish oil. At night he sleeps on an old plank. He ran out of money a long time ago, and he just gave us permission to duplicate his personality. So this is what we've got so far. It's still not funny, but maybe we'll figure it out. You know, we're working on that part of it. The point is, friends, enjoy this world that you're in right now where there's only one you. Enjoy it, because this is the last days of there only being one you. I don't know what terms of services you signed when you signed up for fucking Facebook, but my guess is that it is only a matter of time before you are going to see some version of you, your mom, your dad, your grandfather, whoever's online, and they're going to be selling Pepsi products. Or what's even worse, what's going to happen is something's going to pop up after one of your loved ones passes away, and it's going to be like, would you like to spend another hour with your grandmother? Then all you got to do is watch this 1 minute phone commercial, and then you could say hi to grandmother again, and it's going to be almost just like you were with her, except every once in a while she's going to say,
this is your grandmother. I'm so glad you came to see me. Please, please, please make them stop. Please, just buy an accessory to your Verizon phone and they'll stop doing these terrible things to me. I miss you. I love you. Save me from this hell.
Boy, do we have a glorious podcast for you today. Daniele Bellelli is here with us today. And it's the actual real Daniele Bellelli, not an AI version. And that's pretty exciting. We're going to jump right into this podcast, but first, some quick business.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Ridge. Listen, man, I feel terrible because I left my Ridge wallet in the car. But I must tell you, I destroy wallets. That's what I do. Like, if you are trying to identify me as an animal, one of my primary characteristics would be he destroys wallets as a practice. I don't even know how I do it. Like, I don't do anything special with them, but by the end of a year, if I've even kept a wallet that long, it looks like somebody was using it to train an attack dog. And I don't know what that is, but Ridge Wallet, my God, it has somehow held up. It feels like I just got it yesterday. These things are like the most durable wallet of all time, and it's compact. It's compact. Not some big old giant stupid wallet. You feel like you're sitting on a little pillow all day, smushing it, getting that ass heat on it, melting down the fibers with your flatulence. Not a Ridge. Ridge wallets are insane. You got to try it out. But now, Ridge has just released the Ridge 2.0, the most refined version of the Ridge wallet. It's 10% lighter, and they've made it even more modular with improved cash straps, money clips, and the AirTag attachments. That's right. You could stick a little AirTag on the thing, and you won't lose your wallet anymore. It's made with premium materials like aluminum, titanium, and carbon fiber. Over 50 colors and styles to choose from. Of course, I picked Black Power Wallet. I don't know if they even want me to talk about this, but you got to try their chargers. Check this baby out. Woo! This thing is so good. Look at that. Just sticks to the back of your phone. Beautiful. Built-in chargers. A readout here, so you know how much is charge is left on the thing. And it's, I don't know, man, it holds a ton of battery life. Sorry, Ridge, I don't even know if you want me to read that. So don't just get the wallet, get the charger. For a limited time, Ridge is having their huge Black Friday sale. Head to RIDGE.com to get up to 47% off your order. This is by far the biggest discount they've given all year. That's Ridge.com for up to 47% off your order during their biggest sale of the year. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them the DTFH sent you. Dear friends, if my commercials burn or blast or blow through your sensitive ears in a dark way, if it feels like jagged shards of glass are exploding in your brain every time you listen to me promote a product on this podcast, there's a way out. All you got to do is go to patreon.com/DTFH. You're going to get instant access to commercial-free episodes of the DTFH along with a plethora of other stuff, including rambling hour-long rants and some music and access to our Discord server. Some video podcasts pop up there from time to time. And as Patreon continues to grow, you will find more and more fascinating stuff over there. So if you want to support the DTFH, the primary way to do it is to go to patreon.com/DTFH and sign up. The second way to do it is to support the darling sponsors who roll the dice on this podcast. And the third way to do it is like and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you like and subscribe at. Also, we have a shop with some beautiful, beautiful stuff in there, including Crow's Milk and Stop Drinking Crow's Milk bumper stickers, t-shirts, posters, and other wonderful things. You can find that by going to DuncanTrussell.com. Now, without further ado, welcome back to the DTFH, the host of the Drunken Taoist Podcast, the host of History on Fire, the author of How to Create Your Own Religion, historian, professor, fighter, and all-around saint, the great Daniele Bellelli. Mr. Bellelli, welcome back to the DTFH.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Always a treat to be here.
I was about to say that. Always a treat to see you.
It's fun.
I don't know any other historians. I don't know any other people who have such a deep grasp on global history. And I wanted to start this podcast and possibly make the entire theme of this podcast about something that I love. Conspiracy theories.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes.
I have been, you know, I rotate conspiracy theories.
Right.
My attitude with them is one of, these are like the emerging modern folk stories.
Yeah.
Mythology. Maybe there's some like kernels of truth in some of them, but usually there's so many different distortions based on not enough information or wrong information that they can possibly be true.
Sure.
The most obvious one's flat earth. I don't know, Hollow Earth.
Yeah, there's some pretty weird shit out there, but yes.
Pretty weird shit. But I came upon my new favorite conspiracy theory. And I thought, my God, this is the thing to talk about with Daniele today, which is, okay, so, and I'm going to confuse it for those of you who are more familiar with it because I just got into it, but do you know about the Tartar Empire?
Yeah.
Tartaria.
Sure. Let's go into it.
Okay.
Do tell.
So the idea is that there was some kind of cataclysm that happened not that long ago relative to like how old we think the Earth is. Maybe 500 years. And essentially the history that we think is history is all wrong. It's been completely rewritten. We are living in a false history. The story that we think, the way the United States came about, the way Europe came about, all of it completely, absolutely wrong. The catacombs of Paris, they're not filled with bones because of the plague. That's why they think they're filled with bones. They're filled with bones because of a terrible, terrible cataclysm that happened. And they had to fill the bones up. They had to bring all the dead bodies underneath Paris. So have you ever heard this conspiracy theory before, which is essentially history as we know it is a lie?
History as we know it is a lie is a classic, but you're giving me a new spin to it. So that's interesting. No, I was just reading last night one that sounded vaguely going in that direction. Is it what, the Mandela effect?
Or yes.
Is that kind of a connection? Okay, good. So do explain. What's the connection there between the two?
So, well, okay. Basically, our understanding of history, if we're going to bring in the Mandela effect,
sure.
Our understanding of history would be comparable to a early humans' understanding of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So early human thinks that bases their understanding of the planet on what they can see.
Sure.
And on the highest point that they can get to. So from getting on top of a very high mountain, you can look and see the expanse of things, draw maps based on that, but you can't get into space and see it. Similarly, we're glued to time because we haven't figured out a way to elevate ourselves from the time-space continuum yet. And so our experience of time in history itself is based on the notion of one time stream that we're on, when the reality is that every single one of us is constantly moving through multi-realities. We're moving through various time streams that are all mostly identical to the one that we're in the same way that if you were a person living, I don't know, in North America, your ability to travel from North America to Hawaii, for example, and see a completely different ecosystem would be limited by your ability to get on a boat.
Yes.
So in the same way, because we can't really move out of the temporal ecosystem that we're in, we think that time looks like this. We're in a, you know, post-industrial technological civilization, constantly teetering on world war and stuff. But if you had some extra help via technology, some sort of like magical ability or ability to control your dreams, etc., you could theoretically actually shift timelines all the way to a point where we're currently existing in kind of a Buddha field techno utopia.
A Buddha field techno utopia. Okay, I like that already. So do tell. Evidence. What do they base it on? I hate to be the guy who says that, but...
Well, can we, for the sake of this, just push evidence off the table? Because if we start we have to like go to like in this particular time field, time stream, time space continuum. The evidence is that there is no other... This is it, baby. Okay. We're here.
Right.
I mean, just forget it. Like, we have no quantifiable measurements. Now, you can look into quantum physics. You can look into, like, the reality that if you investigate anything at a deep enough level, it vanishes to see there seems to be a permeability to reality itself. And then, of course, there's the people who say the Berenstein Bears... I remember
So it's exactly what I was reading last night.
Yes.
Jesus Christ, that's weird and odd. Yeah, that is we live in the Matrix, right?
Yeah.
Never heard ever before. Read it last night, and here you are telling me about it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Weird.
Well, it's not too weird because you brought it up. I was talking about multiple histories, and you brought the Mandela effect.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, weird in the sense that, well, what you're talking about is so intimately related to
there is a connection there. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so do tell me more about this.
No, you tell me, because I'm interested in you. Your understanding of history is so much greater than anyone I know who isn't in academics.
Sure.
Academia. So in your understanding of history, are there any iterations of this concept that the reality as we know it history as we know it is not actual history, but that in fact we're living in some kind of confined reality tunnel shared by a certain group of people. We're on the right. outskirts of that. There are all these other realities that are happening simultaneously.
If you get some historians really high on LSD, you may get there, you know, you could, that's worth a shot. No, generally speaking, I mean, the most, and even that's considered way out there, but the most that's kind of within the range of something vaguely similar, and I use the word vaguely intentionally because it's not even that similar, but like if you talk about like some Graham Hancock kind of idea about, you know, our timeline of history is completely fucked up.
Yeah.
It's, you know, his idea about younger Dryas, comet impact. There was way more advanced civilizations before this time that got wiped out. And so our scale of history is really limited and reduced. But even that, almost a square theory compared to what you're telling me, because that's still assuming a linear timeline, a single reality. We just don't happen to know about something that happened long ago. What you are saying is there is no single reality. There's multiple timelines, multiple universes touching each other. That's a whole other, you know, that takes it 25 steps further. And already, like, you know, you take Graham, which I like Graham, by the way. I think Graham has makes very interesting points. He definitely raises some good questions. And even he's considered like way, like when I, you know, I had Graham on, you had Graham on the podcast. I had Graham on a couple of times on Drunken Taoist, and I get like the hardcore guys were like, what are you meddling with this pseudo-historian crap? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, the guy actually asks good questions. You know, does that mean every single thing he's saying is correct? He probably doesn't even believe that, but he's making good points. You know, he's like, so the standard view of history is so square that Graham is way out there. What you're telling me is like make Graham look like the most square human in the universe, you know? So that's the scale.
Okay. Then help me understand this.
Yeah.
When you begin to study history, mm-hmm. is the study of history mixed in with the study of time? So historians aren't even interested in time as we understand it, or physics, or anything like that.
No. I mean, and that's the problem with most disciplines. That's one of the things that I've always disliked about, not even academia, but our way of approaching knowledge. That it's based on specializing to the point where not only you have no connection between history and physics, let's say, or history and any other field, you know, any field with each other, they basically are foreigners. But even within the same field, it's like, what? You're a historian. Well, what does that mean? You know, I'm a historian of 1727 Paris. That's what I'm a historian right. of. And you're like, holy. Like, I remember.
That's so cool, by the way.
Well, I mean, it's cool and it's not. It's cool because you end up knowing every single thing that happened down to what was going on that street corner between 5 p.m. and 5:15 on that day. But at the same time,
how do you know that? Is that real? That's hyperbole.
Totally, it is. Okay. Well, I think that we have established that about every other word that comes out of my mouth is hyperbole. Okay, okay, so okay. We are good with that.
I didn't mean it. I'm sorry if that seemed like a nag. I wanted that to be true.
I would like it to, and I think that's why I like to run with this stuff. But no, I love hyperbole. No, I think what it is knowledge is divided in this tiny subsect that even the guy I was talking with, a lady who was a specialist in Japanese history, right? He's like, it's already limited, right? You take one country out of all of the world. I mentioned a huge thing that happened in the 1400s in Japan. And she was like, what? And I'm like, well, it's kind of important. And she's like, oh, no, I saw it. I only studied Japan from like the 1850s forward. And I'm like, so you're not even a historian of Japan, you're a historian of like one century and a half of Japan. Right. That's it. That's all. And that's my feeling with most of knowledge, that the effort to cross boundaries is next to non-existent.
Okay.
Definitely in academia, but even outside sometime.
From your own personal subjective experience, where do you think history exists outside of the human mind and outside of whatever material it's recorded on?
Well, I mean, and that's when you say whatever material is recorded on, that's the problem with the field itself. that there's no great book of history that you open and tells you everything that happened exactly as it happened, right? You're only as good as the sources you have. And most of human history, we know nothing about, right? Maybe you find one tooth of a guy who lived 30,000 years ago and you go like, what an amazing discovery. It's one tooth of one guy. Come on, yeah. You know, it's like... So most of human history, we have no evidence. The ones that we do know about is usually one guy who wasn't really there, but 60 years later, write about it because his great uncle told him that his retarded neighbor was there one day, but actually wasn't really his retarded neighbor. It was actually the sister of his neighbor who told, you know, his hearsay. So there's monstrous, like when all you have is like three paragraphs in a guy writing 60 years later on a third-hand account, reliability is a little thin, to say the least.
Yeah.
So then the stuff that we do know more about, even when you do have an eyewitness who was there, who said, I saw it, there's the question of reliability to that person. So the moral of the story is a lot of history, there's a ton of guesswork involved. There's, you know, what we say it as fact is maybe, possibly, likely, I hope, fact. And when you start digging down, you have to really separate. What do we actually know about this, which is usually something that can be written in three paragraphs, and what we think that means, and how we connect the dots, which were then how you end up with a book.
Okay, gotcha. So, you know, we know someone built the Eiffel Tower.
Yep.
And we probably know who built the Eiffel Tower. And we probably know why they built the Eiffel Tower. And then from that person, we can kind of figure out who did build the Eiffel Tower.
Noah, Mr. Eiffel.
Yeah, Frank Eiffel. But the sum total, like what's interesting to me is most of us are walking around with a idea of like, I understand the history of the world.
Yep.
I understand how we got where we're at right now. But when you look into it, you realize, like, not only do you have a very foggy understanding of, for example, how California came to be, who lived in California before California was California, what California was called before it was called California.
Yep.
You have a foggy memory of what the fuck you were doing in the third grade.
Exactly.
What you were doing in the fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade. You don't know what you were doing June 15th, 1987.
Right.
And so then you know, as I say, as above, so below, the human psyche is not equipped to remember things accurately.
Of course.
And from that, you could probably extrapolate, then if the sum total of all human psyches is what contains within it our understanding of history, then our understanding of history is completely distorted.
Because it goes through a filter, right? There's no, in that sense, it's almost a philosophical question about the existence of objective reality out there versus what you know that's inevitably filtered through your own subjectivity, which clearly raises question about how much of that is really objective and how much the filter is making up as you go.
Yeah. So this produces all of the wars. And all of the catastrophes and all of the human conflict, because everyone's walking around with a distorted conceptualization of what happened.
Right.
No one even fucking knows. There might be some epigenetic record inside of us, but the reality is it's all distorted. So I'm an American. You're an Iranian. Over there, we've got the Syrian and the Russian, God forbid. And we have all these people wandering around. They have some in their mind, some sense of like, I'm an American.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm an Iranian. I'm a Russian. But really, those people, they don't know what that even fucking means.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't mean anything.
Well, even genetically, it doesn't really mean anything. Because when you look at it, it's like, unless you live in some weird corner of the world that has been isolated, which there are not that many by now, like, I remember when I first started getting into Italian history, because I was like, I read everything else. I might as well learn the history of where I'm from, right? And so, like, at one point I read about the one city where I'm from, and they say, oh, like, 2,500 years ago was founded by the Celts. And I'm like, oh, cool. So there's a Celtic origin. I turn the page, and it's like, Yeah, but 20 years later, this other tribe came in and killed them all. He's like, oh, okay, so not that guy, this guy here. Yeah, but 30 years later, and then you go over 2,000 years and you realize that everybody and their grandmother has gone through there. So what it means to be from there today is a mix of, I don't know, 300 different peoples who themselves are a mix of other things. So you start realizing that this notion of like race, for example, only exists if you keep it in a really narrow historical range, you know, from 1300 to 1500. Oh, I see there's continuity. But once you open it up a little, even the idea of race is kind of a joke, you know, because everybody's a mix of a million different things.
So Nietzsche declares, in a time when it meant something, God is dead.
Dead, motherfucker.
Should we declare history is dead? Should we declare that our devotion and worship of history, our fixation on history, is in fact a fixation on a false god?
Here is where I'm going to tell you no. So here is what's interesting about this, that to me, focusing on the evidence, what do we actually know about something? Like one thing that I do with podcasts sometimes is like, there are awesome stories that I want to tell. When I start looking at the evidence is kind of thin, doesn't necessarily support the stories. So I usually split it in a double track. It's like, okay, this is what people say, and I want to believe it badly. Did it happen? You know, the evidence doesn't tell us that it did. This is what we actually know. And so you have a double layer. You have the mythology, which is true on a different level than historical truth. And then you have what we actually know. And what we actually know to me is interesting because, yes, the sources are limited. Yes, there are problems with sources. Yes, we lack a lot of information that we would want to have. But that doesn't mean that everything out there, every opinion about it is equally valid. You know, some are based on actual facts that you can, despite all the pain and suffering of digging through a mountain of crap, you can actually dig to something that turns out to be semi-solid, versus others are just, you know, random, you're making shit up along the way, you know. So to me, that effort to separate what do we know as much as a human being can know anything, let's put it that way. Because when, you know, when we say fact, even that gets complicated depending on. But as much as a human being can know, we do know certain things for a fact versus all the other stuff where it's like, maybe, possibly, I don't know about that, or no, that goes into legend territory. I think there's something interesting there. And one doesn't necessarily have to kill the other because, you know, just because you want to know the bare facts, well, the bare facts, obviously, there's a lot more that happened. So that doesn't mean that that's the beginning and the end of the story, but that's the solid part of the story.
Right.
The other parts may, a lot happen that we don't know about, and that's fine. And a lot happened that we can speculate about, but that doesn't, that's a separate thing from actual history.
This seems like a non sequitur. It's not. Have you ever been in a fight with your girlfriend?
Mm-hmm.
Or wife, and she brings up a fight that happened like a year ago.
Sure.
To justify something that happened that she did
in
just
the present, then. Of course, right?
And you realize that if because you fucked up a year ago, that justifies her fucking up eternally,
right?
Or I don't know why I'm saying. I'm blaming this on a girl. I've done this tactic.
Of course.
Where you're like, well, you did that two weeks ago.
Right.
3 weeks ago, you were doing it. And you realize, like, if I am using this shit tactic, then essentially I have caught us in a never-ending repeating loop.
Yeah.
And so there's that saying, he who forgets history is doomed to repeat it.
Yes.
But maybe the reality is, he who remembers history is doomed to repeat it. That by the fixation on patterns that have emerged in the past, we're recreating them in the present. And that the best thing to do would be, and this, I love it because it's so blasphemous to so many, abandon history.
Right.
Forget it. It's over. Who cares? Here we are now. So what? Whatever it was. Whatever it was. And now as I'm saying it, I was like, oh my God, this is a delightful blasphemy. World War II, who gives a fuck?
Right.
Founding fathers, who gives a fuck?
Never even happened. Who cares?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so then in saying these things, people are going to be like, what? My fucking grandfather was his age. And my dad. And then, you know, we must worship and bow down to the millions and millions of dead people who have been transformed to dust and are in crypts right now instead of having our own lives.
Right.
It's very similar to people who have a sick, fetishistic attachment to their parents. Mm-hmm. And even when their parents passed, they still try to like live according to what their parents thought they should live like.
Or Norman Bates style. With,
yes.
Right.
Do we as a species right now have a Norman Bates style relationship with history?
I think in good old Taoist fashion, I like to think of it as three stages. There's the initial one where you don't know anything about history, you don't care and whatever, doesn't matter. And then you realize, no, it does. There's a lot to. So second stage is when you realize, no way, everything that you live today has been shaped by historical forces. Who you are, your education, the way your parents raise you has been shaped by. So suddenly you're like, oh, it's all about history. It's all about remembering the past and doing this and that. And then you go to stage three, which is, yes, good that you went through that process, but you also got to live in the present. So dragging on history as if it was this dead weight as a corpse along the way is not helping anybody. That doesn't mean that you should stay at stage one where you just go like, fuck it all, it doesn't matter, it's not important. Is like the classic Taoist parable about learning, right? You don't want to be ignorant, but when you are learned, you are weighed down by knowledge. Knowledge doesn't allow you to live in the present because you are so stuck with concepts that are heavy rocks in your head.
Yes.
So what do? Do you never learn? No, you learn and then you just absorb what's useful from it and let go of the dead weight. So that then learn, it's not anymore knowledge, it becomes wisdom. It's become the wisdom that allow you to actually be in the present, be alive today, here and in this moment, with a little extra depth, a little understanding of human nature and other things that in the specific case that we're using, history can give you, or it can be any other example, right? But we're talking about history, so it is. It's like, it's not a fight between dumb ignorance versus heavy ultra-intellectual knowledge. Is those are two stages along the way, and you ultimately want to overcome both. But you kind of need to go through all of them in a way. So in that sense, to me, history is like, look at something like, to pick a specific example, ethnic minorities who got screwed over.
Yes.
Right? You get the standard white guy response is, come on, get over it. That was 200 years ago or 500 years ago or 100 years ago. It's not today. So just shut the fuck up and get on with it today. And it's a tricky thing because even when it's not phrased the way I did, which is sort of the asshole way of putting it, even when it's done in a nicer way, there is a point to that. That is like, hey, you don't want to just hang on to a past forever in the sense that then you're recreating it in the present, right? But at the same time, it's a little too easy for you, motherfucker, who haven't had that experience to come tell somebody else, hey, you guys need to just get over it, you know? Pull yourself up by your bootstrap and we all start from the same starting line. You know, it's like, to me, it's both at the same time. Is no, you want to know it. You want to understand it. You want to even call it for what it is. And it's important to actually shine the spotlight. Once we have done that, okay, not everything that's happening to you today is the result of what happened 100 years ago and that justify why you are poor and oppressed and I can't do shit with my life because what happened 100... It's like, what happened 100 years ago is absolutely true and it did shape some forces that are still affecting you today. But you also have agency in the present. The problem with those discussions is that they tend to be very one-sided. They are either the, it's all about the past and you are a victim of society, or get over it, none of that is meaningful, none of that is real, it's an illusion, just live today. Both of those tend to a bit oversimplify the situation. One, by saying something true, but dooming yourself to never move on. and the other one by just denying reality.
Well, I mean, to bring it into like a person's subjective daily experience, because I got lucky enough to be the white dude on planet Earth right now. I have no fucking idea outside of my own ability to like empathize and think about it. I honestly just don't like the my friend who teaches me meditation. I was in a fight with my wife when she was pregnant, and he's like, Duncan, if you experienced the hormones going through her body, for 5 minutes, you would be committed based on how I know you. Right. You would just go insane.
That seemed like a fair statement. Yes.
And I like that because I was like, yeah, you're right. I have no idea what that. Yeah. And you find compassion there. But I want to talk about like a thing that haunts so many people. Your age, right? So people walk around, they're like, well, I'm 45 years old. I'm 20 years old. I'm whatever age. And at every single age, people feel a different type of pressure based on where they're at. So if you're 15, the pressure you're feeling is I need to like do good and figure out what I'm going to do and what college I'm going to go into and fit.
I was thinking get laid, but sure. Okay.
That's, get laid, of course. And figure out in the midst of that how to deal with your fucking raging boner.
Right.
Then you get into your 20s, you're in college. Now you got to deal with the fact of like the weird presentation of potential careers all seem like just essentially like different nooses with which to hang your future on. And then you get out of college and you have some job or you have to find a job or you decide to be an outcast wanderer or whatever, but still you have this feeling of some encroaching thing called your 30s. And then you get to your 30s, you're like, wait, I'm in my fucking 30s now. Then you get to your 40s, like, holy shit, what have I... So all of these anxieties are hanging on top of a sense of time, and each and none of them are really that useful in the sense that you've set a clock, you're like, I got this long to do some dumb thing called my life, and the way I'm going to do the dumb thing called my life is not based on some intuition or instinct, but it's based on an approximation of what a good life is, based on what I've been told a good life is by the movies, TV shows, and things I've been taught. And it could be that all of those are totally wrong. That in fact, the reality is you have no fucking idea what a good life is. You just know how to parrot, imitate, and mimic the other monkey descendants.
Right.
So this is a way that people torture themselves. I've met 28. I was talking to some guy. I think he just turned 30. And he was so sad. And he said to me, you know, I'm getting old. I'm like, what the fuck are you?
Yeah.
You're in your fucking 30s, man.
Yeah.
You're getting old?
Yeah, fuck off.
What are you talking? Right. What are you talking about? You are out of your mind. You might as well have told me that a witch has a piece of your hair and is poking a fucking voodoo doll with it in a forest, and that's why you feel bad.
Right.
Except you're the fucking witch, right? Yeah. Because you have hung your life on a time. So similarly, I can speak to the rancid white supremacists that I've seen on the internet who are deeply glued to the idea that white people are responsible for all the good things in the world.
Sure.
These idiots are so attached to that idea and they've done nothing. These are people who have maybe done like 8 push-ups in the last 3 years.
Right.
Their great accomplishment in life was connecting their computer to the internet.
Right.
You know, they've done nothing.
But we created, of course.
You did shit.
That was a great, I was watching, I'm sure you have seen it, this great Stanhope bit where about nationalism, and he's like, you know, because we freed France during World War II. And he's going on of like, hey, Mike, I remember getting wasted last night.
That's
I remember where, but I don't really remember it as in the mud in France.
Doing, that is it. And so this adherence or fixation on the past historically and this weird sentimentality people feel about it, I think is very similar to a kind of religious fundamentalism. And I think it is ultimately disastrous.
Yeah, and I think I know, I think there's a reason why you connect religious fundamentalism to this, because even though they sound like very different things, they are rolling around the very same issue to me, which is identity. Mm. People badly want to belong to something. People badly want to have an identity outside of just their own individual identity. Because it's hard to just have your own, you know, when you're by yourself, you have to figure everything out in life. Yeah, there are guidelines out there, but you have to choose between 10,000 things. It's fucking hard. It's scary. And that's why, despite what people say, people love dogma. You know, dogma is like a sweet mom who holds you in her arms, yeah, saying, don't worry, baby, it's going to be okay. Just follow these rules. This is who you are. This is your identity. This is what your past is. Just go with this program and everything is going to work out. And it's a super seductive concept for a lot of people, because otherwise the alternative is that you have to figure shit out for yourself.
That's right.
And that's hard work. So whether is there an identity of being what, you know, what kind of religious fundamentalism do I want to jump in? Why? Because that's going to give me the answers to everything in life. I don't need to create shit. I just need to follow a blueprint. Or what historical identity I want to embrace. I am whatever the fuck I am, right? And you decide, people like me have this culture, we like these things, we suffer this thing, which make us more in this such fashion. And it's like, and again, you're buying a set of clothing, essentially. You're putting on this thing that you want, because it's like, why is it so hard for people to live without a prepackaged identity? Because then you have to create it every fucking step of the way.
Who's creating it?
Well, if you don't have a prepackaged one, then you have to do it.
Who's the you creating identity?
That, right. So you are in this flow of shit that's part of this one body that you have. And you are in this constant state of flux. And in this process, you are trying to grasp at something to hold on to.
It's Memento. Remember Memento, that mm-hmm. cool fucking movie? Yeah. And the guy's written all over the walls all this shit to remember. That's history. And humanity is this vengeful, many people are like this vengeful dude who's like looking at the walls and trying to summon up, who the fuck did this to me?
Right.
It's the situation is one of, on one side, it's completely tragic to me, because mm-hmm. here we all are, essentially in these, like, I guess, what, meat inner tubes floating down this beautiful lazy river called time. Yeah. And sometime back there, people passed some crazy shit. There was some wild shit back there.
Sure.
Meanwhile, here we are.
Yeah.
And all these people are like, oh, but back then, and they remember when we passed that fucking tree with a thing in it that hissed at us and threw fire.
Of course.
Now that's gone. Now we're in this. And so I think you're right. It hinges not only on the problem of having to establish your own identity, but do you think it also hinges on the problem that identity is identical to any other thing that exists in the material universe? As Bob Thurman, the great Buddhist mm-hmm. philosopher, says, the closer you look at anything, mm-hmm. the less it seems to be real.
Sure.
And so you start with history and you realize, wait, I don't know what I ate for lunch 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And I'm supposed to believe that some shit that some guy wrote down on a scroll after he heard it from a guy, heard it from a guy, heard it from a lady, heard it from a guy who maybe dreamed it, is real.
Right.
And so then you're like, oh shit. So probably a lot of history is distorted. We do have landscapes in the sense of there is the thumbprint mm-hmm. of something that happened in the material, in the material world, but we're not quite sure if our logical explanation for those things is real. And then this starts going deeper and deeper and closer to home until you realize, like, wait, if I don't know, remember what I had for lunch 2 weeks ago on this day, was I even there?
Right.
And then that starts getting closer and closer to your, like, suddenly here you are now. And you realize, like, oh, fuck. But this thing that I think I am right now is based on all this other shit that's probably not real. So then you get into your own self, and now you start dissolving. And this is, I think, maybe where you hit the fundamental conspiracy, which is that there isn't an identity.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't an individual self. in our entire lives, from the moment we're born to the moment we die, we're told that we are real. And because of that, we're all going fucking crazy.
Right. It's Maya's game, right? There's this idea. Yeah, it's exactly. And I think that's the issue right there. The notion that, you know, when you strip it down to an almost Buddhist philosophical level, is there anything really that, or even like the Hindu idea of like, is there even anything outside of you? Is there like, you know, a hardcore one branch of Hindu's philosophy argue that everything on earth is part of the same being? It's just this one entity, right? So that all the other things are an illusion, are a play, are a game that you play throughout existence, where this one thing that makes up the universe split into 10,000 things, and then the interplay with these give you history, give you life, give you things as we know it. But ultimately, they are all faces of the same God, right? Every single one. You know, it's on one end is a cool concept that's based on something, because, you know, yeah, you're right. When you, the harder you look at something, the less solid it seems.
Yes.
At the same time, we live in a universe where in order to function, you have to buy into the separation between subject and object. You know, the me and this table are not one and the same.
Well, yeah.
If we were, as I'm driving, that would be a problem. You know, it's like, so in order to function here and now, you have to go by a subject-object duality and act as if it was real, whether it is real or not. That's a whole completely separate discussion.
Yeah, you used to have to fucking go to church on Sunday or they'd set you on fire.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always an adherence to some illusionary thing that's being supported by people with guns, ultimately. It's like if you spend too much time in Western society existing in unit of consciousness, you're probably going to get arrested. You know what I mean? Like someone's going to come and like be like, no, you don't understand. You have to, you didn't pay your taxes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You didn't pay your rent.
It's like, yeah.
You need to act like this shit's real. We're literally being forced by people standing with guns behind the people standing with the forms to pretend this shit is real.
But, and I guess because the problem is that if you take the position that shit is not real, then you, it's kind of hard to go on living in this dimension when you make that switch. And not only because, you know, there's some asshole out there who's trying to impose a certain reality on you, but because if you start arguing, like I was talking with a dude who was a hardcore Zen Buddhist, right? And he was telling me this stuff about, you know, he was doing meditation, this and that. And he was like looking at money like, ah, oh, money is an illusion. It's a piece of paper. It's not real. There's nothing real.
Did you ask him for his money?
And for what, well, it got worse. Sorry. Because then his teacher was like, yes. And you think that your wife and daughter are any more real than that piece of paper is? And he wasn't too happy about that part, right? Because he's like, on the money part, he could, you know, he's like, yeah, whatever, fuck it. Take the money. I don't care. When it gets to something else, it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Now we are taking it to another level that I'm not comfortable with, you know?
Well, that's right. It is. Well, I mean, because it's uncomfortable. It's like, you know, you wake up in a world where everything's distorted and you can't find a way to find an undistorted anything because every single thing is distorted. Mm-hmm. At least if you're picking up data from other people. And then, you know, you end up with science and you end up with some, you need some way of like figuring out like, well, what, and this is the beginning of any great philosophical system.
Yeah.
And you know, nihilism can be an accidental byproduct of the conceptualization that everything is not real. Then you end up in, you can end up in a spiritual bypass. You abandon your responsibilities and just, I don't know, just what do you do? You just fuck, I don't know what. You bore people, basically.
Right.
You become the most just boring.
Just like, fuck off again. That guy again with his nothing is real thing.
So, but, and that all, I think, is absolutely, abjectly a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
What if we, or the sort of fixation on the identity, the doll of who we think we are, is an obstruction that's getting in the way of our ability to move through time in a way that people haven't quite moved through time yet. In other words, like by getting stuck on the identity, we are held on in the way that the Earth's mass pushes into the time-space continuum and holds us fixed where we're at and keeps everything from flying off into space. The subjective mass, the ontological mass, the mass of our fixation, not only on our own identity, but on our historical understanding of the world and our fixation on our very distorted sense of truth, has produced its own kind of subjective mass mm-hmm. that is literally locking us into this particular timeline. And that by gradually letting go of our addiction to the conceptualization of ourself, we simultaneously experience radical shifts in the timeline that we're living on. And so when you hear about enlightenment, it isn't a thing that happens to you as a person. It's a thing that happens to the entire time-space continuum that you're living in when you achieve realization.
Right.
So the more you let go of your attachment to this yourself, suddenly people report, oh, fuck, I've started having synchronicities. Then people start saying, yeah, I got this weird ability to like almost read people's thoughts. Mm-hmm. And then people start saying crazy shit, which is like, oh, no, I saw someone walk through a wall. Mm-hmm. Matrix shit.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I can't believe I just said Matrix shit. I used to say if anyone says this is like a Matrix, I wish their balls would explode because it's so annoying. I only have one, so yeah. I got to be careful.
careful about the one ball.
But this is what I mean. It's like by focusing on whatever your idea of your own personal history is and the history of the world is, this is the tether locking the hot air balloon of your identity to the particular part mm-hmm. of the multiverse that you call reality. And the more you let go of that, the more you notice things seem to change, not just subjectively and not just interpersonally, but on the global scale.
And I find it ridiculously fascinating the way you have come around to this whole from where we started to where you're at right now. Now, for the sake of everybody listening, not suddenly bemoaning the fact that good high quality LSD has sort of disappeared from the market and there's less than before, or at least that's the popular perception.
You need a better drug dealer.
Exactly. And suddenly they are scrambling for a good drug dealer to be able to keep up with the conversation. I think healthy step, baby step, you know. You think like what we're saying right now is weird shit and you're not buying any of that. That's fine. Baby step to test the water with. Just that doesn't hurt. You don't have to go any further, but it's not a bad idea. That notion of identity, take a look at in your own life, which of course is different from everybody. You know, my experience, Duncan's experience, totally different, but anybody else listening, totally different. What are the things that you think define you, that make up your identity? Mm. Your gender, your nationality, your skin color, your whatever the fuck, you know, list them down. Like, what are the things that you feel are shaping who you are as a human being? And don't get me wrong, everybody's got a filter. Of course, the gender is a filter. As you said a few minutes ago, if you have certain hormones going through your body, it's a very different experience than if you don't.
Sure.
Right? So filter, we get it. How much do you actually invest in that identity? How much being a male from a certain country shape who you see yourself as being, you know? And what I would invite people to play with is try to kind of lower the volume on that voice a little bit, you know? It's like, for example, I always find it funny when people are... And granted, this is also, this is where the objective and subjective meet, right? If I hear somebody telling me, which I've heard a lot, because so many of the people I've known are not big fans of white guys, right? So if I hear somebody telling me, fuck white guys, they did this and that, they're horrible, fuck white people. I don't take it personal, because I'm not white people. You know, it's like, yeah, I happen to have light color skin. The fuck do I care? I know exactly what you're talking about. That wasn't me. I got nothing to do with it. So yeah. I'm not even taking it like you're talking to me. Now, of course, it depends on how other people around you perceive it. You know, you can be, have whatever ethnicity you got, have whatever gender, whatever age, whatever thing by which people perceive you through and try to put you in a certain box and you don't identify with those things, but everybody else around does identify you with that. Well, suddenly now you do have something in common with the other guy who also has light skin or also is from the same country or age. Not because you really have something in common, but because everybody else treats you like you do.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, we do have one thing in common. We get treated the same by these guys over here.
Yes.
But my point is like, other than that, do we really have anything in common? Do we, you know, we do on a human level. But does that, it's kind of like, that's why to me the whole discussion, to take a specific example, something like nationalism, which is a big part of many people's identity, right? Where they are from, their nation, yeah, their thing, never made any fucking sense to me. Like, not even a little bit. Because to me, it's like, people are like, oh, aren't you proud of all the things that, like, Leonardo da Vinci or this shit that came out of Italy? I'm like, it wasn't me, man. I mean, yeah, that's sweet, but what the fuck do I have to do with it?
Right.
You know, it's like, I'm born in the same nation. That's what makes me special.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean shit to me. Similarly, I don't take all the crap that happened in Italy as being who I am. You know what I mean? I don't. And even that identity is funny because that only exists when you are comparing yourself to the outsiders, to, yes, the guys across the border. But when people start looking inside, it gets a whole different story, right? It's like, well, we are great and proud Italian. Except for you guys from the south, because you guys kind of suck. I mean, when I speak Italian, right, it's more like the north. That's the real Italian.
Oh,
but even
God,
that, you know, 50 miles away, yeah, there's that town Bergamo. They speak funny. They eat weird food.
Yeah.
I guess they are Italian, but that's not really what I mean. You know, it's like the city, Milan. Not the outskirts of town, though, because that's white trash. I'm,
yeah,
talking more about the central. So it becomes your neighborhood minus the people who share a wall with, pump up the music at 2 a.m. and you hate their guts. Your family, minus your brother who's an ass, you know, that identity suddenly shrinks,
yes,
to a level where it boils down to the individual.
Yep.
And the bigger that identity gets, the thinner it gets. Like, what you actually do share is minimal.
So what is it? What do we all share?
I think that's what interests me. If we are going to go past the individual level, then go all the way. Go to a human level. Go to, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to live in this body? What are the things that I can... And fuck, I can even take it further. Even, you know, with a goddamn animal, with a mammal, with another mammal, with a dog.
Right.
You can... I can have empathy for the dog. He can fucking understand where I'm coming from,
yeah,
some of the time. I understand where... I know what you need, man. It's that particular type of food that you want. And, you know... So to me, that interests me more than anything else is... Every single person is a mix of 10,000 influences, which, as you rightly say, they are constantly changing. It's not,
yeah,
even a stable thing in itself. So if your identity is an ocean, is this constantly changing body of water that's changing every second, and everybody else's is too, great. Figure out a way how to roll in the present moment, to flow, and using as much empathy as humanly possible, where you can find ways to relate to somebody who, of course, has a different body than you, has a different age, has a different experience, has a different order.
But he wants to be happy.
Exactly.
She wants to be happy.
Exactly.
We all want to be happy.
Yep.
That's what we share.
Yep.
And the dogs do too. And the birdies do too.
Yep.
We all want to be happy. When you're in traffic driving home, what do you have in common with everybody? They all want to go home.
Yep.
Every single one, just like you, they want to go see their babies, uh-huh, their wife, they want to go watch Netflix, they want to be home. And that's what's happening.
Yep.
The difference, the problem is, because we are still living in the era of believing that ourselves are real, is they think they want to go home more than you want to go,
uh-huh,
home.
Of course.
Everyone's like, when the self-driving cars come, traffic will be much better because they'll be able to drive and, like, they'll all synchronize.
Yeah.
We don't need that. The moment we all realize, when you're looking over at the pissed off dude who's glaring at you,
mm-hmm,
you know why he's glaring at you? Because he's got this beautiful baby at home and he's been at work all day and it's bath time.
Yep.
And he knows he's got to get home in 30 minutes to give the baby the bath or the baby has to go to bed.
Yep.
And he's fucking wants to see this adorable little baby. Or someone wants to go home because they're in love with someone and they just met him and they're late for the date. Or all these beautiful reasons.
Of course.
And The problem is they all think that reason is more important than your reason.
Of course.
And this is why we're in hell. And this is also why simultaneously we're in heaven. Because all you got to do is flip the switch the other way.
So how do you... I get it and I like it philosophically. How do you live in a very kind of thanks and close world in which, you know, if a tiger decide that the deer has just as much of a right to life as I do, and look at that beautiful deer roaming around, I shouldn't eat it, and tiger starves then. Or what you see
so,
where I'm
okay,
going?
Yeah, like, we have to take the idea of the expansive global utopia, and we have to start with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I can't fix the tiger-deer relationship yet. But...
Well, as humanity, we're doing a wonderful job wiping them all out so there won't be any relationship to deal with.
That's one way to fix it.
Right? Yes.
I mean, the other way to fix it would be to come up with some kind of, like, bio-organic, like, robotic deer that have tofu flesh that the lions can still enjoy eating and chasing them while the other deer sequestered to some other... I don't know, man. But that's for DARPA to figure out.
Yeah.
Like, the first step is, I think, has to be a subjective shift of circuitry. And to me, I think of Terrence McKenna when he has one of his very great... probably unscientific yet beautiful explanations of why when you smoke DMT you enter into an alternate dimension is that it actually reverses the spin of, I can't remember how he puts it, but on some quantum level it's causing the circuitry in your consciousness to reverse, and in that reversal of the circuitry the veil is temporarily lifted and you see reality as it actually is,
right?
Which is populated with, you know, various entities of such tremendous beauty that it as he puts it, you could die from astonishment. Now similarly, I think that it would begin with a subjective exploration of intentionality in all people so that we could determine where the evil is.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found in that, in my own sort of exploration of that, is that every single person that I have met thus far in my life has been tortured by their selfishness. And in that pain, they're acting in ways that is intolerable to mm-hmm. people around them, which is compounding their suffering. That's it.
Hmm.
No evil, no nefarious anything, more just like the way an animal with his or her paw in a trap reacts when someone comes and takes the trap off.
Yeah.
No one would say that animal is being a dick.
Sure.
When it's trying to bite you.
Yeah.
You wouldn't go to the animal and say, listen, why are you being such an asshole? I'm just trying to get your trap off.
Right. Yeah.
You know? It's similarly, I think this is what we're witnessing, is that every single one of us has gotten our soul trapped in our identities.
Mm-hmm.
And that is producing, for many, many people, a great deal of suffering. Because the difference between, in this weird analogy, is the animal knows the trap is hurting it
mm-hmm.
and will gnaw its leg off to get out of that fucking trap. A human will fight to keep the trap safe. A human will put lipstick on the trap.
Of course.
A human will like buy the trap rings and Rolexes and beautiful watches. The human will look at other people's traps and be like, what a fucking
loser
in his ugly trap.
Yes.
This is the problem, I think. So the idea would be first explore that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Is your identity really bringing you pleasure? Is there joy in your desires? Is there something you're really getting out of this never-ending exertion to try to get people to know what you're like?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I found that there is not much there.
I'm with you. I think identity in many cases is a crutch, that when you feel that you can't handle life, that's when you cling the hardest to. And, you know, look at who are the people who cling the hardest to a rigid identity. that's why to me it was interesting when you use the word fundamentalism, because often is not just, oh, this is my idea. It's like a clinging heart. This is the absolute truth. Don't dare question it kind of thing, because it's like, otherwise they feel lost. Otherwise they feel, rather than swimming in a beautiful ocean, they are drowning there. And they need something to hang on to because they feel like it's too much.
That's
and
right.
They can't handle it. So I even get that. I understand why people do it. I get it. Why people are addicted to rigid identities. Ideally, either you learn or somebody teach you to actually swim, so you don't need to cling to this goddamn rigid identity that hard. But I understand that until you're getting your hang of how to be in the water, it's scary. And I understand why somebody would do it.
For sure. I mean, it's mainly because things that are in pain, they're not generally rational. Mm-hmm. You know, I know myself when, like, I get angry enough, my rationality goes right out the fucking window.
Absolutely.
And that anger is just suffering. And yep. Suffering makes you act crazy. So, yeah, to me, it's like history, I think, for a lot of people is a type of, like, imaginary bear trap that seems to have imprisoned in the way that the individual identity and our attachment yep. to our personal history seems to be causing us to be stuck. Because if you're in a bear trap, you're not going very far. I think that in the same way, history is this bear trap that seems to have encapsulated the sum total of all of us and is causing a great deal of suffering. But who the fuck knows? Anyway, Mr. Bilelli, I know that you've got to go. It's we are now at 12:05.
I have a few minutes if you want, or we can wrap up. However, if you feel that we're in a good place, we can wrap up, or I can stick around a few more. Up to you.
I think that I want to. Can you talk about the phone conversation? I just want to wrap up on this.
Tell me about the phone conversation.
Okay, just a little quick history.
Yes.
This is when you know you have cool fucking friends.
Yes.
Right before we start the podcast, Daniele's on the phone with some mysterious person planning a fight in Japan.
Yes.
For his girlfriend.
Yes, correct. That's, it's an interesting universe.
What's going on with Savannah? What is that? Can you talk about it?
Yeah, sure. She fights for ONE Championship, which is in Asia is the biggest MMA organization and is definitely, even globally, is pretty up there. I mean, there's UFC, of course, but there's ONE is huge. And it's kind of cool. ONE is an interesting take on things because it's perfect for her personality too. Because, you know, a lot of UFC, a lot of like MMA in the West tends to be very, you know, just bleed kind of stuff. The ultra macho trash talking type of shit. That's what sells fights.
Yeah.
That's why trash talking is such a big part of the game.
Sure.
ONE is trying to push a more sort of traditional martial arts, respectful, mellow kind of thing.
Cool.
And it fits her personality way better because she's not a trash talker. She's very polite and sweet and stuff. So it's like, plus she's like, you kidding me? I get to fly out to Asia and fight in Asia. I get a free trip out of it. What? Yeah, I like that a lot better than being flown into Kansas City. No offense to Kansas City, but you know what I mean, you know? So she's excited. She had her first, I mean, she had a couple of fights in US, sort of entry level stuff. Then she had her first fight for ONE back in December. That was exciting. Man, this is how people are wired differently. So it's 2:30 in the morning in US when it's happening. And, you know, I'm watching it live on TV and I'm on the couch and I'm fucking hyperventilating.
I bet.
Right? I'm just, the fight hasn't even started. There's just the walkout. And I'm just going like, and I watch her and she has this big smile, like looks like a kid in Disneyland, right? She's just happy and relaxed and just high-fiving everybody. And afterwards she told me, you know, it's funny. It's like when I did my walkout, my heart rate didn't go up one bit. And I'm like, how the fuck is that even possible?
That's
like
crazy.
Humanly, how is that even like... Just the thoughts, my heart starts beating about twice as
much.
Mine
is beating right now, thinking about that.
What are you talking about? But you know, people are oddly wired. Like, she can do that, no problem. You put a mic in front of her and ask her to talk about her feelings, and she starts sweating bullets. I can do that in my sleep.
She's a warrior.
Right? It's like, But yeah, no, it's exciting because she did really well so far. I mean, all her fights ended in less than 2 minutes so far. She's kind of a beast because, you know, most female MMA is very technical, especially when it comes to punching power, usually not quite up there compared to men. It's very rare to see sort of the one punch KO in female MMA. For whatever weird thing, she punches hard. Like, she can turn your lights off with one punch. So it's it's a trippy. And then you meet, you know, you hang out with her, and she's like the most soft-spoken, mellow person in the universe.
She's the most peaceful, sweet person. Be careful out there. Don't be tricked, friends. There are a lot of people who have lightning in their fists that are the sweetest people out there. You would never guess it. Very quickly, you made a huge shift to a new podcast network.
Yeah.
You want to talk about it real quick?
Sure, let's do that. Man, it's... The problem is I have two podcasts, Drunken Taoist and History on Fire. Drunken Taoist is a chatty, happy podcast. I don't really need to prepare. I can just put the mic on, call somebody I like Mr. Duncan Trussell. We start jamming. It's great. It's awesome. If people donate, it's sweet. If it works financially, it's sweet. But if it's not, it's not taking crazy energy from me, so it's cool.
Right.
History on Fire is a monstrous time investment because just to be able to tell a story where you really know your story well, you have to read multiple books, do the research, behind every episode, you know, a two-hour episode will have probably anywhere between 100 to 200 hours of work behind it. So that's not the thing that I can do as a kind of fun hobby in my free time, because there is no free time left if I have to do that.
It's writing a book. It's like writing a book.
It's like writing a book every month.
And then doing an audio.
Exactly.
Book.
And that is like next month you do it again. Yeah. And then again and then. So realistically, it got to a point where it's like, okay, I either need to cut down significantly on the number of episodes I released. And, you know, I still treat teaching as my prime profession, and this is a hobby that I do in my spare time, so I can only do a 2, 3, 4 episode a year. Or if I want to keep up the pace that I've kept so far, which is 15 episodes a year, I can, you know, the free model of podcasting wasn't quite doing it for something that required that time investment. You know, if everybody who listened once a year donated $5, I'd be swimming in gold. I would have no problem.
Right.
But the reality is that, you know, most people who listen to podcasts do not exactly support, you know, maybe, I don't know what your experience is. Mine has been maybe 1% at most.
Something like that. Average. I mean, there's a statistic out there for what that is. Yeah.
It's really fucking low. So the problem is, as much as the free model is pretty in theory, for something that required that much energy like History on Fire, I just couldn't do it anymore. So I got an offer from Luminary. We're kind of creating this, you know, they have their app for the free stuff, but then they do premium content.
Yeah.
And so they have like 30 or 40 podcasts that, you know, what I ask for mine is I still want to put at least 2 episodes a year for free out there. So I'm not just saying, fuck you guys, I disappear. I'll give you what I can give you if I don't need to rely on money. But then for the other stuff, it's just exclusive to Luminary.
Wait, it's you, it's Conan O'Brien, isn't it?
Yeah, like, they've got like Russell Brand.
Russell Brand.
Trevor Noah.
So it's like, you know, when I heard about it, I had a reaction that was kind of probably like what you're getting online from some people. Which is like, but then when I thought about it a little bit, I realized this is a great experiment. And if it like... What is it? It's $9 a month or something?
I think $8.
$8 a month. If like, you know, I don't know why everybody uses the fucking coffee metric for this shit, but if for 2 lattes a month, you like have access to like some kind of like, you know, amazing content. That's the main thing. I know if your show, I don't know what these other people are going to do.
Of course.
I know your show's incredible.
Thank you.
And it's worth $8 a month by itself. But I think people need to lighten up a little bit on this because it's like, come on. This is no different from the shift from commercial television to to like Hulu or Netflix or whatever. It's like, you know, like give them a break. You're fucking busting your ass to research history. And it's like, it's either that or, you know, commercials. But...
And that's, I think, is the problem, that people bitch about these, and I understand, they're like, that's not how the culture of podcasting, I get it. When I have commercials, you're bitching because I have too many ads. when I ask, okay, can you support on ad-free on Patreon? Oh, Patreon is an evil corporation squashing free speech. I'm never going to use Patreon. Okay, about PayPal? I don't want to deal with PayPal. It's like, come on, just what the fuck do you want me to do? You know, it's like...
And also, it's not even them. It's like 9 people. That's the main thing.
Yeah, of course.
It's like if you go and look at like the people who are bitching about Game of Thrones, sure, or the people who are bitching about like this amazing video game I've been playing called End of Days, or you know, the zombie game. I can't, the fucking great game.
Right.
Days Gone. That's what
Days
it's called.
Days Gone. Okay.
It's great. Like, right. I love it. I'm now playing it every night. I have a sentimental attachment to my cheesy character.
Right.
I was so excited about it. I went to look at the reviews. It's like people are nitpicking.
Of course.
This beautiful thing that if you travel back to the 70s and showed it to somebody, it would probably put them in a mental asylum.
Right.
They wouldn't be able to handle it. They would have a fucking meltdown. So we have to ignore those people because they're just unhappy. And I think most other people are happy just to have access to your brain. So congratulations on that shift to Luminary. And I
thank you, my man.
Many will subscribe to listen to your wonderful podcast, History on Fire.
Yeah, it's a trippy thing. I mean, what you're saying is you're 100% right. You need to focus on creating shit, not what... Because everybody's going to have an opinion and not everybody's going to like you. And
that's
I get
right.
it. I realize that one of my weaknesses is, for whatever reason, maybe it's a narcissistic thing, I don't know, I feel horrible if I have the feeling that I'm letting somebody down.
Me too.
So if somebody's telling me, oh, I was listening, I loved it, and now, fuck you, you betray me, because I feel like, no, let's talk about it. And, you know, and of course, it doesn't work that way. You know, it's not the, but it really, it shouldn't bug me. It does bug me.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, fuck, man, I just...
Yeah, we have to let go of that.
Yeah.
It's the bear trap.
It is.
It's one of the many spikes on the weird bear trap that has us chained to the time-space continuum and is keeping us out of the DMT universe where they already have fucking spaceships. God bless you, Danielle. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much.
Until next time, my friend. Thank you for coming out here. Woo, that was fun.
That was fun.
That was cool, man. Much thanks to Blue Chew for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. And much thanks to you, Chew. I'm sorry, I'm a dad now. I make the worst jokes now. For listening to the DTFH. And much thanks to Daniele Bellelli for appearing on this episode today. If you like the DTFH, won't you subscribe to us on Patreon? And like and subscribe on iTunes. I feel so old, I'm not sure what that means. Can you even like on iTunes? Oh, leave us a nice rating. And leave yourself a nice rating. You're doing fine. Jeez, we're barely here for a second. Trust me. It goes by in a blink of an eye. If you're walking around and smiling every few months, you're doing great. Even if you're not walking around and smiling every few months, you're doing great. You're doing great because you exist. Until next time. Hare Krishna.